My name is Bob Livingston. I was born November 26, 1948. My father's name was Harry. My mother's name was Reva. I was born in San Antonio, Texas, at the Bexar County Hospital there in the middle of town, just around the corner from the Alamo. San Antonio was a bustling town. It was a great place to grow up. I had some good friends there. I was a kid. We did things like run from roof to roof. We knew the whole alley scene and the back alley scene. We kind of lived in town, in the middle of town. So those were great days growing up. San Antonio has changed quite a bit. I mean, it's a giant city. I appreciate the way they put their infrastructure out there so, you know, you can get around the city pretty easily. I haven't lived in San Antonio since I was 9 years old, but my brother lives there, so I go back every once in a while, and I have a gig there every once in a while, so I go back and, you know, it's not Austin. And there's not a lot of places to play. That's the one thing. It's a different kind of music they like. There are not many folk clubs, not many listening rooms. My brother was a musician. He won the Starkist Amateur Hour when he was a kid, and I thought, okay, this is pretty big. He's going places, and so he was in bands, and I listened to him, and I wanted to play too. By the time we moved to Lubbock when I was like 9 and a half, 10 years old. And at some point, I don't know if you remember, there were these S&H green stamp. You would get, if you go to Piggly Wiggly, which was the supermarket, and you bought $45 worth of food, they'd give you a certain amount of stamps. And you could take these stamps and put it in a book. And you could, there was a green stamp exchange store. So you would go to this store and they would say, you know, for this quilt, you need 7 books of stamps. And in the case of the ukulele that I had to have, it was 3 and a half books of stamps. So I, you know, stole stamps from anybody I could and went to Piggly Wiggly as much as I could and stole them out of my mother's purse and compiled 3 and a half books of stamps and went down and got my first musical instrument that was mine, a ukulele, and I could just play it right off. It was amazing. I just learned the chords and I could sing anything. The way it usually happens when you get a ukulele, it's 4 strings, but the chords are very similar to a guitar. So when it came time, I, you know, went down to Sears and bought me a Stella guitar. I think I borrowed the money from my brother and never paid him back, but you just put the low A and E on that, and you can chord it similar. It's a different key, but you can chord it similar to a ukulele. And so suddenly I could play the guitar. And then we had a piano in the house. We were a musical family. Everybody kind of played something. And I started to slowly learn how to play that, keyboard instruments. And one thing led to another, and I was given opportunity, I can tell this story now or later, but I was given the opportunity to play a bass guitar, and from that moment onward, once I learned how to play bass, it changed my life in the way that I became, instead of being the folky with my songs and singing, I was backing up other people and on a bass guitar, bass and piano mainly. I didn't have formal lessons. I just did everything by ear. And the one time that I had a chance to do some formal lessons in college and I took a piano course, they would just kind of play the song and I would just hear it and I could play it. But I played it completely different. The professor knew I was screwing up and didn't have the fingering right and was not playing exactly the right notes. And I couldn't read music. I couldn't wrap my mind around it, but I could play by ear. I could play anything that way. The challenging aspect of learning to play music is that it requires a lot of practice, which I was never very good at. And some people would sit there and play a guitar and listen to Elvis or Buddy Holly and learn those licks and play them over and over and over again. They even had a cassette machine that slows everything down real slow where they can learn the lyrics. I never wanted to do that. I just wanted to play the chords and sing the song. And I went to a lot of camps, church camps and whatnot, and I found that playing the ukulele or then later the guitar got you a lot of attention, but I didn't want to practice it. And I, as a result, I play about as good as I ever did from all those years ago. I'm a guitarist now. I've turned into a folky. I play all over the world. I'm a storyteller. I tell stories and sing songs, usually solo 75% of the time. I also have a duo that I can do in a trio or a full band if needed. Ray Wiley Hubbard said, I gave you a piece of advice. First get the gig and then get the band. And so it depends on how much you make, before I have a band. But I can do it by myself. And I just came back from Pakistan. I work for the State Department. I get tours, cultural exchange tours, and I've been to 32 countries with them. The key characteristics of my style of music are stories and songs. And, a guy and his guitar and a voice and singing and being an actor in a way and telling these stories and putting people in the scene. I do a lot of history, in some of my music. I've been informed by a lot of different musics, like Indian music from India and, of course, Kahunto music and stuff. But mainly I'm the folk tradition, and it's just a story and a song. My style of music has changed in that I have branched out, and I love a lot. I listen to a lot of music, and I love different styles of music more than I might have. And I love classical music. I love rock and folk and Spanish music. I enjoy driving around the country and listening to the local radio stations and what kind of music they're into. Though, if you ask me, who was the band, who that band was, or who's top now and all these, I have no idea, not a clue. I don't listen to, I don't follow the current trend very much. My first band was called the New Grutchley Go-Fasties. I was about 12 years old. It was a jug band. And a little bit later, and then I was still a folky, so I did a lot of, I played a church once, and Jewish synagogue guy hired me for $5 to play, and I had been chopping. My job all summer was chopping cotton, which is chopping the weeds out of the cotton rows long as you could see, stretch for miles and miles, and that's why I'm so burned up and weathered, and I pay you 50 cents an hour. And so suddenly I got $5 for 30 minutes, hanging out, and it was a eye-opener and a big epiphany. And I started delving more and more into that. I was still a solo entertainer mainly. I went to Red River, New Mexico in 1969. And I met this group there called Three Faces West, Rick Fowler, Wayne Kidd, and this wise ass named Ray Hubbard. And you know him as Ray Wiley Hubbard now, maybe. And we became friends. They were playing interesting songs. They were in a band, and they were playing a lot of music that they wrote and that they didn't write. And they found these great songwriters, and one of the songwriters was Mike Murphy. Now Michael Martin Murphy, but he was a Dallas boy, had gone out to Los Angeles and was working for Screen Gems Music, writing songs. He wrote a hit for the Monkees called "What Am I Doing Hanging Around," and wrote a song for Patti Page. Anyway, one thing led to another. I got a record deal, and so I for Capitol Records, and I was going to make a record. They gave me just enough money to buy a Datsun pickup truck and a Martin guitar. I was driving down a dusty dirt road in Los Angeles one day when the hand of fate just kind of came out and steered my little Datsun over the side of the road where there was this hitchhiker, and I picked him up. I don't recommend you ever stop for hitchhikers, but if I hadn't, I wouldn't be doing this interview today. Such an impact it had, because he turned out he was from Germany. He was a mechanic, worked on movie stars, Jaguars in Hollywood. And he says, the only other Texan I know is from Dallas. He's a musician too. His name is Mike Murphy. So I was like, give me his name and number. And more importantly, give him mine. And that night, Murphy called me up. Who are you? Why am I supposed to call you? And told him I'd met Ray Hubbard in Red River, and I thought his songs were about as good as anything since the Beatles. And he said, you know what? You're a genius. We need to meet. So we became friends. And this is when my record deal fell through. I didn't know what I was going to do. I had no plan B. I didn't know what I was going to do. And Murphy said, I've got some gigs back in Texas. Come play bass with me. I said, I don't know how to play bass. He said, you'll learn. And he handed me a Fender Precision. And from that moment, I was played bass behind in bands. I played in Murphy's band. Jerry Jeff walks in the door. I'm suddenly playing with him, making records with him. Ray Wiley Hubbard, we formed a band. The band that played with both Murphy and Jerry Jeff and a lot of other people was called the Lost Gonzo Band. And we played all during the 70s. And occasionally, you know, once every 100 years or so, we appear out on the moors like Brigadoon and play another show or make a record. So I've been sort of band savvy ever since, playing bass mainly. And I'm in a band now called the Lost Austin Band, and basically we do songs of the 70s and 80s that, ironically enough, we played with those players, Willis Allen Ramsey, B.W. Stevenson, Willie Nelson, Michael Murphy, Jerry Jeff. We do a lot of their songs, and I play guitar in that band, but it's a really fun and a great bunch of guys. It's kind of interesting the whole idea of being in a band and a band of brothers and getting into fights and everything, loving each other. I had passed through Austin, of course, as a kid on the way to Lubbock, which is where we were moving. I had come maybe when I was in college, came down here once or twice. But really what made me move to Austin was when I joined up with Murphy. It was in 1970. And when we went on that tour, we played Austin, a place called the Checkered Flag and a place called Saxon Pub. It's original Saxon Pub out on 38th and Half Street and I-35. And Austin was a creative boom town. It was streets were full of musicians and poets and artists and actors and dancers. And we said, this is a place for us. We need a place to live. When we moved out of California, we weren't going to go to Dallas or Lubbock. So we chose Austin. And so somewhere around 1971, we moved to Austin. I think whatever moves you, you know, you can see somebody like, it's not the voice. It's not the playing. It's something magical that makes it excellent. Look at Woody Guthrie. Of course, his songs are so amazing. But you'll hear people that, I hear people all the time that are really not professionals, but there's something about, I do a lot of folk festivals. And with folk festivals comes the territory of the campfire scene, where everybody's doing their song, whether they're a professional musician or not. And you very rarely hear a bad song. They're usually going to play the best song they've got. And there's always some excellence in there. And it's sort of intangible to me. Of course, being a great classical player that has mastery of his instrument, or being someone like Stevie Ray Vaughan that has mastery of his instrument, that's excellent too. But it doesn't always have to be. They say it takes 10,000 hours of practice to master whatever you're trying to do. And maybe that's excellence after that. Not sure. What do I value the most about being a musician and why? Well, I love the freedom. I love the fact that I don't have to have a paycheck. I love the road. I can still get in and drive 500 miles. And it's hard for me to drive 500 miles and play that night, though I've done it. I love the people you meet. I love the idea that I'm there's a challenge before me of getting on stage with a group of strangers and selling them. And I've played in places that are, you know, I mean, cockfights. You know, I've played in places that are just piss joints that they're not going to listen to you at all. And to me, that's a challenge to, and I demand attention. And I'll say, hey, you back there with a red shirt on, this is important. Listen to this. I mean, I'm pretty good at doing stuff like that. So I love the challenge. You know, it is a struggle. It's not the greatest money at my level. You know, I've never really made it gigantic, but I've made a living at just music for 47 years now. So I must be doing something right. I think the challenges and opportunities that people face today are much more difficult than it was back in the day. Or maybe not, because everybody now can put out their own record. This was unheard of back in the 70s. You almost had to have a major record deal with MCA or Capitol or A&M or, you know, one of those big companies to put out a record. And if you didn't have that deal, you didn't really have anything to sell. With the advent of cassettes, people started putting out their own. Jerry Jeff Walker was one of the first. He put out a cassette when he couldn't get a record deal anymore, and he put out his own material, and he was able to make all the money. So that's a good thing. But the idea that everybody in the world is a better guitar player than you are, or a better singer. There's every kid. I mean, I'm competing with kids, you know, with 20-year-old guys that are playing the same club, you know, folk festivals and all that. And I've been told a lot, like I'm playing the new Kerrville Folk Festival this September 1st. I'm playing that. But I've also been told by the same producer, Bob, you know, all those old dinosaurs that used to come and support these festivals, they're all too old and they're not coming out anymore. They're dying off, and all the old musicians, a lot of them are going away. And to keep us viable, we've got to have a younger audience. So we're going to have younger groups and younger bands. And so it makes me feel a little weird, but I do get in still. I'm getting in. But, you know, that aspect is there as a guy like me who's 68 years old, and I'm working harder than I ever have worked. I'm playing all the time. It's the never-ending tour. And you look at guys like Bob Dylan, Paul McCartney. I mean, Dylan's going to be 80 soon, and McCartney's 75 or 60. They're billionaires, but they love to play, so they play. You know, it's just constant. The younger musicians have a tougher road being noticed and being heard because everybody has a record. And that makes it hard on me, but it's hard on them too. I'm lucky that I have it's an independent label, but it's a small kind of a boutique singer-songwriter label called Howlin' Dog. And they put out Shake Russell's latest record and Michael Hearns and a few other people. There's another young woman that they're fixing to put out. I can't remember her name now. But so they have a team behind it. And if you don't have a team, I mean, once I was told by a record, a program director at a station, he says, look at this stack. And there was a stack of CDs about this high. And he goes, this is what I got this week. And what is going to make me look into that stack of CDs and listen to it? Number one, if it's on a major label, I might listen to it. Number two, if it's on a really well-known independent label, I would go to that next. Number three, if I've heard of you before, even though if it's not, I'm going to go to that next. But if I've never heard of you and I've never heard of the label, I'm probably never going to be able to have a chance to listen unless you bug me. And bug me means I'm going to call this guy up. Did you get the record? Yeah, I think I did. Have you played it? No, I haven't. Well, can you please play it? Yeah, I'll try. Call him 2 days later. Did you have a chance to play it? No, I haven't yet. Well, will you try? So there's all that in there that you've got to have to be a young musician today, or even an old musician. You got to have somebody doing that. So it takes a lot more. You got to be your own record promoter, basically. And so there's a lot. It's tough, you know, tough making a living in this business. In Austin, Texas, you almost have to pay to play in some of these places. That's why I never play here. You got to say, they give you 50 tickets or whatever, and if you don't sell those 50 tickets, you got to actually pay the club owner for those 50 tickets by hook or by crook. And that's crazy. So it's tough. Well, I was living here. You know, it was a great opportunity to live in this beautiful city with, you know, the capital here in Barton Springs. And I can't believe you hadn't been to Barton Springs. That's just mind-boggling, but you've got to do it. And there was just all, you know, the Armadillo War headquarters was here, the Vulcan Gas Company, Castle Creek, all these great clubs, Saxon Pub. We could make a living. We could play in these places. And it was just a beautiful city. And it was really, really, really creative. I met my wife at the Armadillo World Headquarters. We had kids here, grandkids here. So, you know, I'm socked in. Whether I'm going to be a lifelong Austin person, the jury's still out on that. I'm not absolutely positive that I'll be here forever. I'd like to go to New Mexico, but Austin's the place, you know. I have a line in one of my songs. Well, there's a couple of songs that's on this new record. I got a new record coming out on September 1st, and one of the lines says, I'm more easygoing, like the Colorado flowing, Austin bound, you know. And you know, as a songwriter, you write what you see sometimes. And Austin is what I see. And I've had several references to Austin in songs of mine. And just being able to hear any kind of music in the world and get inspiration is also a real treat, you know, though I don't use it near enough. No, I would never be the same musician. But, you know, there's been a lot of synergy in my life, and I've leapt and the net has appeared. Picking up the hitchhiker, if I hadn't picked him up, I mean, what would have happened? Would I have ever met Murphy? Would it have been the same, you know? I had a chance to go to India. I took the chance. Guy told me there's a chance to be a work for the State Department. You know, if I hadn't have done that, who knows? If I hadn't gone to Armadillo that night, I wouldn't have met my wife, you know? So there's a lot of synergy involved. And being here has always... I don't have to make a living here. That's the thing. But it's nice to be from here. That helps in the scheme of things when they hear you're from Austin, Texas. I've heard people say, well, you were from Austin, so I went out there and looked up Wikipedia about you and learned who you are. And they, a lot. I play a lot of house concerts all over the country. And the house concerts are the best gigs. You don't have to play in bars. People aren't talking. They come there to listen. And there's a bunch of great house concerts in Austin. So when you play them, you can tell your story. People get a lot out of it. And when they find out I'm from Austin for some reason, it helps. I don't know. It's intangible. But, yeah, I don't think I'd have been the same if I hadn't been here. The Cosmic Cowboy movie. The Cosmic Cowboy movement. The great progressive country scare of the 70s. I was just doing an interview with a guy yesterday that's writing a story, and he interviewed Michael Murphy for the interview, and Murphy said some nice things about me, so I'll say some nice things about him. But in this interview, when they ask him, Murphy gives me, Bob Livingston, credit for coining the term Cosmic Cowboy. So that's big news. And what happened was, we were out on the road. People had called me Cosmic Bob. That was a double-edged sword. And we were in New York City. We played the Bitter End, famous Bitter End. We played that. And we were up on the roof of this Holiday Inn with me and Murphy, and I was just saying, "Oh, Michael, I'm just a cosmic cowboy," you know, and he wrote that song immediately. So that becomes Cosmic Cowboy. We were all of a sudden we were the Cosmic Cowboy Orchestra, and Cosmic Cowboy was the name of his next record. So that just kind of went into the lexicon, you know, and we were the Cosmic Cowboys. It was the time in Austin when we would play a show, the hippies and the rednecks would all come out to it. And it had a lot to do with beer and pot, I think. But they still loved the same music. And people, you know, all of a sudden Willie Nelson hits town. And he had short hair when he came to town. But by the, you know, in a year, he had long hair. And Waylon Jennings started having longer hair. And so all these, you know, these country music enthusiasts looked at this and really love this new kind of music, this progressive country, this cosmic cowboy music that told stories. A lot of them were really, either Murphy or Jerry Jeff hardly ever wrote a blues song. It was always up, party, have a great time, especially Jerry Jeff. People, that's all they wanted to do. I mean, we put out records that sold a lot of friggin' records. And I've had people tell me for years how this record changed her life, and that's the reason they moved to Austin. It was one of the main albums is called Viva Terlingua, and it was recorded out in Luckenbach. And it's pretty much live, and people listen to this stuff, and they move here just because of it. They looked at the music scene and wanted to be part of it. I'm still a cosmic cowboy. Some of the best gigs, of course, were at the Armadillo War Headquarters, and it's just amazing. And I saw her. Heard some of the best music. I heard Ray Charles, I heard Van Morrison. I miss Bruce Springsteen, but I mean, they, back in the day, that were some of the, everybody who was anybody came and played the Armadillo, and it was just very funky. They had the great beer garden, and being part of that was big, and I'll always treasure and cherish that. One of the most probably important gigs that I played here was it was sometime in probably 73, and there was a club called Mother Earth, and it's on Lamar. It's where that Cheapo Records is now, but it was a club then. And we played a show. The band, the Gonzo Band, was going back and forth. We'd do a tour with Murphy, and then we'd get home and go right out on the road with Jerry Jeff. And in a lot of cases, we played double shows, double concerts, they called it. So this one night we played and they made a poster. It said double concert. It was Jerry Jeff, Murphy. The band played. We never left the stage. And that night is when all the hippies and rednecks and everybody was loving the same music. And that was the night that Eddie Wilson, who was the president of the Armadillo War Headquarters, brought Willie Nelson and took him for a tour through Austin. And he brought him to that club. And Willie looked around and saw all the cowboys and the hippies, and they're all loving the same music. And he said, "This is a fantastic place." And then they took him to the Armadillo, and it was just reinforced maximum. And it was what made Willie want to move here. When he saw this kind of camaraderie through the music, that these could be politically diametrically opposed, but they still love the same music. We couldn't figure it out, you know. So yeah, that's probably the biggest. You know, I've played a lot of good shows since then. I played Austin City Limits the first season. Played Austin City Limits 5 or 6 times. Now it's Austin Outer Limits, but during those days it was the local musicians: Frida and the Fire Dogs, Greasy Wheels, Bobby Bridger, Lost Gonzo Band, Jerry Jeff, Michael Murphy. We all played pretty much every season for a while. So that was big. All the stories just end up having a lot of fun, even if you had to beat somebody up. Even if the only answer was a fist, they were fun and funny. An interesting story is when I met my wife was at the Armadillo, and I had played a show with Murphy that night, but Jerry Jeff happened to show up. So after the show, all the roadies are slamming amps and they're doing the folding chairs and they're putting everything up. And I look out of the corner of my eye and I see this little sprite. She's this totally drop dead cute girl, and all she's wearing is a muumuu. Remember a muumuus? It's just a piece of cloth that she had tied. So, and she's throwing this frisbee for this giant Great Dane. And she's throwing that while we're doing this. And I'm looking at her while talking to Jerry, Jeff, and Murphy. And suddenly Jerry, Jeff peels off and Murphy and I are walking and she's walking ahead of us. And I'm not the kind of guy, maybe I am now, but I wasn't the kind of guy then that could go, hey, baby, what's going on? I just had no idea how to stammer and say anything to her at all. And here she was leaving and walking away. And we stopped there in the doorway and Murphy and I were talking. And suddenly she stopped and she turned around and walked up to us and said, I just want you guys to know that I was in really bad mood tonight. And I've never heard of you, but someone said you should hear this band, and I went and it just changed everything, and I'm just such a great mood. Life is great and beautiful, and I just wanted to tell you all that. And we said, well, thank you very much. And then she turned around and started to leave again, and I still didn't have the power to say anything, but this bum, this guy, a homeless guy or something out in the parking lot, walked up to her and go, hey, baby, hey, you have a cigarette? And I was like, hey, leave her alone. That was my big entrance. And I said, hey, you know, do you want to go to a party? And she said, yes. But as she tells our kids today, there was no party. But we've basically been together ever since. One way or another, by hook or by crook. Sometimes not together, but we're together now. I was inducted into the Texas Music Hall of Fame in 2016, Texas Music Legends Hall of Fame. It's called I was inducted into the Texas Music Legends Hall of Fame in 2016. That's kind of nice, having some, you know, recognition or whatever. And now I'm a legend. And I was also, my last CD, 2011, was chosen as the Album of the Year, the Texas Music Awards. So I've had a little success like that. It doesn't always translate into fortune, but I'm still doing it. And I can't imagine when I think of moving somewhere else, I really can't imagine doing it. Austin is, you know, I guess has me in. It's just a great place. If I could think of some really wonderful thing to end on, I would. But I think that's probably it.